Leaders are influencers, and it's nearly impossible to maximize your influence when you're being dragged down and distracted by crippling anxiety, overwhelming stress, and private doubts and fears. We're unlocking the secrets to being fully present, expanding our potential, and growing our wisdom. Welcome to the Calm and Confident Leader Podcast with your host, Jason Stonehouse. Jason is the founder and lead coach at Life in Process. He helps professionals and leaders conquer anxiety and fear so they can maximize their potential. And now, grab something to write with and engage in today's episode.
Hey, I want to welcome you to another edition of the Calm and Confident Leader Podcast. My name is Jason, and listen, I am so humbled and honored that you would take some time out of your day to join me in this podcast and be able to hopefully add some value to your world. Now, up until this point in our podcast, we really haven't done a lot of interviews, and that's been on purpose. I've really wanted to establish a foundation around this idea of what it takes to rise above our circumstances and situations and the toxic people in our world so that we can bring calm, even in the midst of very anxiety-filled situations. But then also to build the foundation for confidence, because authentic confidence is not something that we can fake. We can't fake it to make it, as they say. So true confidence is going to take some time to really build and understand the way that we think, managing our emotions, and all of the things that we've talked about in previous episodes. So if you're just catching on for the first time, I would love for you to go back and listen to earlier episodes and get some of that foundation. But as we move on now, I want to expand and see if we can add some extra voices into our conversation by doing some interviews, some authors, some coaches, some other folks out there who really, I think, have a lot of value to add to each of us as we continue down this journey. And today, I want you to hear from Nick Shaw. I just had an opportunity to interview him. Nick is the author of a new book called My Teacher, My Son, and really talks about this traumatic experience that he just went through recently in the last number of years, losing his son. His son died, and it radically shaped and changed his trajectory moving forward. And today, he works as an executive coach. He works with a lot of leaders, and he has a lot of insights, particularly on some of the topics that we discuss here on this particular podcast, dealing with authenticity, dealing with empathy, dealing with anxiety. I think you're going to find this interview to be rich and helpful for you. So without any further ado, I'm going to jump into this interview and be able to add some value to your world. Thanks again for listening. Jason, and I've got a special guest with me today. Nick Shaw is going to be on the podcast with us, and he is the author of My Teacher, My Son, Lessons on Life, Loss, and Love. And he is an executive coach, he's an author, and co-founder of Mirrorbox Leadership Lab. So I'm really excited, Nick. Thanks so much for taking some time and talking to our audience today.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah. So I work specifically, or this podcast is specifically for leaders who are really dealing with the stress and anxiety side. And I know that you have experienced a lot of loss, but you've been able to translate that loss and your experience of losing your oldest son. And you've been able to translate that into life lessons, leadership lessons, those kinds of things. So tell me some of the things that you maybe didn't expect to learn going through this process.
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say first and foremost, one of the things I learned specifically as it relates to, I think, all of us as human beings, but also as for leaders, is the importance of every so often pausing and reflecting on what's going on in your life as a human being, but also your life as a leader. I think, you know, you said you work, or this podcast is about, you know, leaders dealing with stress and anxiety. I think a lot of that stress and anxiety is because people don't pause enough, right? I think leadership in this modern era is sort of being on that proverbial hamster wheel. It's you're always in go mode. And I think when we get on that and stay on that for too long, it can lead to anxiety, to stress, to depression, and also lead to lives that are less meaningful than they can be. And so the big lesson I learned, because I was forced to do it after I lost my son, was I had to step away from work from 6 months. I had to pause. I had to reflect on everything that was going on and just take stock of what all this meant for me. And then from there emerged all these wonderful lessons that allowed me to grieve and also grow and develop as a result of it.
So practically speaking, obviously you take, if we take time off, you know, 6 months to go through something like you went through, how do we integrate that into our everyday lives as leaders now when we do have all those demands and that hamster wheel and all of the things? So how do you find the time to reflect? How do you find the time to really pause and think about things?
Mm-hmm. I think first and foremost, you have to prioritize it. And yes, I'm not suggesting everyone take 6 months because that's just not realistic. Mm-hmm. I do think that a lot of times leaders overemphasize or overprioritize sort of doing, putting out fires, being in the fray, so to speak, when I think there's an opportunity to also spend some time and prioritize what I call think time, just time for you to step back and sort of take a look above the fray, see what's going on, see if you need to adjust your strategy, reflect on how you're showing up as a leader, see whatever modifications you need to make in that vein. And you can't do that when you're always in the weeds. You have to be able to step above, step back, and take a look from afar. And I'm not, you know, it can be half an hour, hour, 2 hours a week, whatever works for you. But you just have to prioritize it. And what that often means is you have to deprioritize other things. You know, I was recently talking to a leader I work with, and he's been quite successful at this. And what he described was he's a ruthless prioritizer, right? Which he really just said, this is what's most important and this is what's not. And therefore he creates that space for himself.
Yeah, I think a lot of times leaders don't realize that every time we say yes to something, we are saying no to a bunch of other things. And so there's no such thing as that innocent yes, you know, and that's what I'm thinking about when you talk about that deprioritization. It's like, if I'm going to say yes to taking time to reflect or go deeper on my own self, then I'm going to have to say no to some other things that are good things. They just may not be the best things.
Yeah. It's funny. I can't tell you how many times I've used that construct with my clients. I think more often than not, we say yes to the things we shouldn't be saying yes to. And therefore, we can't say yes to the things that are most important, like maybe taking some of that white space time for ourselves.
So one of the concepts, just switching gears a little bit, that we talk a lot about is this concept of authenticity. And there's a lot of leaders that are dealing with imposter syndrome, that are feeling that the need to be perfect, to have it all together, to all of those things. So how do you fight for, just kind of like you talked about, that fighting for reflection, how do you fight to be authentic? Especially, I guess I would like you to speak specifically to the concept of leaders who have been seen one way, maybe even became successful being that performer, that perfectionist, that all of that. And now they're like, this is not sustainable. I need to move to be a more authentic leader. How do you help somebody make a transition like that?
Well, first, I think you have to help them realize the need to do it. And it sounds like in the scenario you presented. So obviously there, if the need is felt, then that's where you need to start from, right? Because if you don't feel like there's a need or belief that changing in that way will result in some kind of benefit, you're not going to do it. So first you have to really sort of say, why do I need to do this? Why is it important for me as a leader to do this? And there can be a slew of reasons for that. And then from there, it's really, you got to just take a look at yourself and define what does being yourself look like? You know, what aspect of yourself in how you're showing up are you not allowing yourself to be yourself? Because I think a lot of leaders don't bring their full selves to work because of maybe some narrative that you're not supposed to do that in the working world, or maybe they don't want to come across as looking weak or being vulnerable. Whatever the reason is, they have to sort of examine those and find alternate ways or ways of reframing that narrative. Because we do things because it's the way we make sense of the world, because it's our narrative of how things should be. So I think it's really about taking a hard look of why do I behave this way? Often there's something there. There's something beneath that is causing us to show up in the ways we do, and trying to find ways of reframing that narrative. And then slowly you implement them slowly, right? And you start to prove to yourself that, hey, when I am this way, when I am more authentic, it does yield these benefits. And then eventually, as you start realizing those, it becomes more ingrained. You do it more, and then the positive flywheel starts going, and you get to authentic leadership.
So what do you do with the people around you who really don't like that idea of you having boundaries or you being fallible, you being vulnerable even? I want to speak to that in just a minute, but I'm just curious, how do you deal with the people around you who work for you or who you work for, who they expect you to deliver and they're not real keen on this authentic you?
Well, I guess one question before I answer is, I mean, obviously as leaders, we have to deliver. So the hope is that being more authentically you won't cause a, won't put at risk your ability to deliver, right? So,
okay.
So assuming that that's the case, I think, look, if you've been one way as a leader for a period of time, and all of a sudden you come to this realization you need change, I think you want to let people know, at least the people in your sort of close circle, that these are the things you're working on. I think it can be quite shocking or destabilizing for the people you lead to all of a sudden show up differently as a leader. So let them know, hey, I've come to this realization. I feel like I need to show up differently at work, and here's the things I'm going to be working on. So the more transparency, the better, because what happens when we're not transparent is people start to see you behaving differently, and then they start to develop some kind of narrative as to why you're behaving the way you are. And typically that narrative is often not positive. So get ahead of that and just tell them what's going on with you and share what you're working on.
Oh, I like that. I really like that, being upfront on the transparent side, because you're right. A lot of times we think about it after the fact, and then somebody says, explain your behavior, and now you're being defensive, and now all of this. And if you would have just got on the front end of it and kind of prepared, at least your, like you said, your inner circle or the key people that are going to need to know that information, because the reality is you're not going to make a lot of those other people happy. You know, there's always going to be people that are going to be disappointed in you and that kind of thing. Sure. So let's speak a little deeper on the idea of vulnerability. Why do you think leaders struggle to be vulnerable? Like, even like I'm thinking of you, you obviously stepped back for a season, but I'm guessing as you're going through grief, as you're, you know, it probably softened you in some very different ways, allowed you to maybe be more open about things that you weren't open about before. So I wonder how you made that shift to say, it's okay for me to be a little more vulnerable. It's okay for me to maybe show some of my grief or my pain. What did you have to overcome in order to get there?
I mean, first off, I had to overcome some old, age-old narratives about what it means to be a man. Okay. My role model for manhood was my father, like most of ours is, right? I think my father who's almost 90 now, came from a very different era, right? And so, men from his era, you had to show up in a certain way. Vulnerability was not part of the vernacular back then. Mm. And so, sharing your emotions, confronting your feelings was not something that was modeled for me. So I had to sort of learn how to do that at later in life. And also realize that, it is okay to be vulnerable and have feelings and express them and be a man. Right. So I think that was first and foremost. I had to just get comfortable with that. I think I also had to just learn how to connect with my emotions, which again was not necessarily something I was great at. But when you experience loss, pushing those emotions away often is not the best strategy. So, my best bet was just to face them head on and acknowledge them and be with them. And honestly, it was my path towards healing. So for me, it was a bit of a survival thing. It is the only way I was going to make it, be able to move forward after losing my son. And to be honest with you, as I wrote my book and put it into the world, it's been quite amazing, because I put myself out. I mean, I bare my heart and soul on the pages of my book, and the response from people I know and don't know has been amazing. And it just goes to show that when you are vulnerable, it invites others to be vulnerable with you. And so that's a great lesson for me, and just the power of vulnerability. And I think that's the same thing for leaders. And I think one of the problems with this word vulnerability for leaders is we think being vulnerable is just coming to work and bearing our souls, right? Mm. Which I don't think it has to be that. It's just opening yourself up a bit more when the situation might call for, as opposed to always being very guarded and protected.
So, sorry, just before you finish that last part. So just to summarize what you said so far. So I've got to be more in tune with myself before I can be vulnerable with somebody else, right? So I think there's a misnomer out there where, you know, leaders or even men, I see this in a lot of like couples that I work with, is like, well, he's not telling me how he feels. But mm-hmm. the reality is he doesn't know how he feels, you know? So I think we always have to start with that. And that's what I'm hearing you say is, I've got to get in touch with my emotion. I have to understand what's going on inside of me before I'm ever going to be able to share that. And then like you're adding that layer of sharing it appropriately, right? It's not this bearing of my soul. But if we don't even have resources to understand ourselves, then we're not even going to know what to share, what not to share.
Exactly.
Okay.
And again, I think for a lot of, and I don't mean to generalize, but I think for a lot of men, the way we were brought up, we weren't necessarily taught. And I think of a certain generation, by the way, I think, unfortunately, things are getting better with the younger generations. But, you know, I know for my generation, we just weren't given that language. So it's something we have to learn how to do.
Do you think that this issue that we're discussing right here plays into the levels of anxiety and stress that leaders feel?
I'm sure. Yeah, because look, I think particularly with the new generations in the workforce, they are expecting a different kind of a leader. You know, the leader, the stoic, heroic leader of old, is not what those generations need. They need leaders who are going to show up as more authentically themselves, who are going to, you know, own their mistakes and be vulnerable, who are going to connect with the people they lead and be empathetic, right? So if you didn't grow up learning how to do those things, and this is what the people you lead need from you, yeah, it can be quite unsettling.
Okay. I want to stay on the authenticity side just for one more minute here. I want to talk about the idea of, what if I don't really know who I am? And I think that gets into, like you were saying, the lack of being able to even know my emotion. But even on a deeper level, I work with so many leaders who, I call it the false self. You know, they've constructed this false self, and they have put so much energy and effort into portraying this image that they have, you know, whatever skill sets, whatever. So I'm just curious, what do you do with somebody who says, you know, I've spent all my energy building this image of myself. I don't even know who I am anymore. How do you help them get on to that? Who am I authentically?
I think this is where, again, maybe not a 6-month pause, but some periods of pause to allow yourself to reflect on those questions. Who am I? What do I stand for? What are my values? What am I here to do with this one life I have? I think the power of pausing, again, even if just periodic through your weeks or months or whenever you do it, is about asking those important questions. The act of reflection is a lost art. No one does it anymore. You know, and if you think about it, you look at like all the historical, you know, biography, those were all written from the journals that people kept back in the old days. And no one does that anymore. No one stops to sort of take stock of what's going on in their lives or of who they are. And so I think that's what needs to happen. You have to just be able to look yourself in the mirror and in some cases ask some pretty tough questions and confront some pretty tough things in order to figure out who you are and also who you want to be.
Is that something you think you can do on your own, or do you need a coach or a counselor, a therapist or something like that to do that process?
I think it's always helpful to get support in those endeavors, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, for me, you know, after I lost my son, William, I had to go through a very, you know, I had to confront a lot of things about myself head on, because, you know, when, you know, I was just in such a broken and vulnerable state that everything about who I was emerged to the surface. And, you know, I kind of had no choice but to go there. And I sought the help of a therapist to help me process, because doing it alone, it's hard to do it alone, because I think we can trick ourselves or convince ourselves that what we're experiencing is not real, or we can, you know, try to just brush it to the side. So I think you need someone to help you to ask you the right questions, to help you reflect, and also to hold you accountable to a process of continued reflection.
That's great. That's really good. Let's switch to the other, put the shoe on the other foot now. You write in your book about this concept of how you better understood empathy as you experienced it from other people around you and those kinds of things. So I'm just curious, as somebody myself who has struggled with that in the past and has, because I think I've been such a hard driver and, you know, performing and hitting the ROI and getting the hitting the goals and all of that, that sometimes, you know, you can almost miss the people that are actually helping you achieve those goals and get to those places. So I'm just curious, as somebody who's kind of just learning this, what would be some lessons learned as far as empathy and how it can develop?
First off, I think so. Empathy is one of these words that I think gets a lot of play, just like vulnerability. And as a result, I think sometimes we do that at a discredit. We make it bigger than it sometimes has to be. I experienced a lot after I lost my son, because, you know, I experienced a lot of acts of empathy that were wonderful, and I experienced a lot of acts of empathy that kind of missed the mark. And I think a lot of times people think empathy is about saying the right thing, right? And my experience is that true empathy is just literally, if you're engaging someone, they're having some kind of an emotion. It's about trying to put yourself in their shoes so you can connect with whatever emotion you think they might be feeling. Now, you don't have to guess exactly what they're feeling, but if you were in their shoes, how would you feel? And then somehow sharing that with them. And sharing it in a way that is authentic and genuine and not overdoing it. Oftentimes it can be as simple as just sitting and giving the person space to share whatever's going on with them. It can be very subtle, but I think often we think it has to be this perfectly orated sentence that you put out there to make this person feel a certain way. And that's the other problem with empathy. I think is a lot of people think empathy is about trying to get the person who's feeling whatever emotion to sort of move past it, right? We want to help them not feel that emotion, but really it's about just letting them feel what they're feeling and being with them in the emotion. And then when they're ready, they'll move on from the emotion. But
hey, this is good stuff. We're going to be right back to this episode and this interview with Nick Shaw. But I just wanted to take a second just to remind you, if you're not following us over on social, actually just started a new TikTok account, Coach Stonehouse. Coach Stonehouse is my handle there on TikTok. And I do a lot of leadership moments and little videos that I know are going to be helpful in your development. So I'd encourage you to check that out. And here is the remainder of our interview with Nick Shaw.
So we don't want to try to problem solve someone out of their empathy, out of their emotions, right? You just got to let them be with it. Give them the space, be there in the moment. And oftentimes just acknowledging that will allow them to move forward.
I really like that we can't problem solve people out of our empathy. That's a good quote there. You might want to write that down and post it somewhere, right? But so yeah, the word I've been playing with the last year or two with a lot of my clients and for myself personally and my own development is this word curiosity. Mm-hmm. And when you talked about this idea of empathy and you said, you know, trying to put myself in their shoes and understand what they're feeling and then echo that or reflect that to them, I feel like, you know, maybe the piece that we need to add there is to do it with a curious rather than a, I know how you're feeling, or I know what you're going through, because you don't know what they're going through. So it's more of a curious, like, is this how it feels? You know, or is it more like this, or is it more like this? You know, almost that curious, or even just like you said, giving that space, say, I don't know how that would feel. Tell me about it, you know, and being curious with that person.
Exactly. Yes. I think I love that ad. I think curiosity, is a wonderful way to connect with someone on anything they may be feeling or thinking, right? But it's about going at a deeper level, because curiosity can be quite surface level, or if you're willing to ask the right questions, you can go deeper and get under the surface of what's going on with the person. And that, to me, I think is an empathetic way of engaging someone in a way of connecting with someone.
I want to talk a little bit about grief because I don't think it gets enough play. It's not like empathy and vulnerability. I don't think it gets enough play, particularly among leaders, particularly in the corporate culture, because, like you said, maybe it's a seen as a weakness. I know a bunch of people who are like, why kind of like dwell on the past or dwell on these things that are so painful or so hurtful? Let's just keep moving. And the definition I've been playing with is grief is letting go of loss. And if I know that's pretty broad or general definition, but my sense of it is we experience a lot of loss, like things that we expect, things that we hope for, they just don't come through. Like even you said before about our parents, you know, there may be things that we wish our parents did that they didn't. That's a loss that needs to be grieved. Like, yeah, I didn't get that from my parents. I didn't get that. I didn't get the thing that I was hoping to get. So speak about that, particularly in the context of a leader, the place of grief. How do I get comfortable with the idea of grieving? And maybe speak to that importance of grief, because I don't, like I said, there's a lot of people I meet that are just like, why dwell? Why go there? Like, just let's move forward.
Yeah, it's great.
Sorry, I gave you a lot there
No,
to,
no,
so
no,
feel
no,
free to pick up wherever you want on
no.
that.
Absolutely, absolutely, right? You can grieve the loss of a job. You can grieve the loss of a loved one, obviously. You can grieve the loss of a relationship. You can grieve the loss of how things used to be at, amidst change, right? All of that. I think anytime there is change, there is a process of grieving. The process of grieving is just about processing what was lost. It's not about dwelling on it, but you have to get to a place where you experience the emotions of loss. And I think the outcome, so it's not moving past lost. I would slightly change that to it's about getting to a place of acceptance of what you lost.
I like
Accept
that.
it that once whatever you lost has been lost, then that's the path for moving forward. And I can attest to that, as a parent, losing a child is the worst possible thing. And through a lot of work and processing, I've accepted the fact that my 9-year-old son died. And that to me is the outcome of a healthy grief process. Because then you can move forward and not dwell on the past, right? But it's only when you get to acceptance that you stop that quote unquote dwelling piece. And so for a leader, I think we have to understand that. We have to understand that everybody goes through some form of that process, and you got to give them the time and space to do that.
So even like bring like I love the way you put the concept of change, that anytime there's a change, that there is a grieving going on, at least for somebody, right? Somebody who used to like the way things were or remembers back to those things. So we as leaders have to be tuned in enough to the people that we're leading to say, hey, they need time. But then on the other hand, my mind immediately goes to what if there's people that just can't seem to get there? They can't seem to get to that acceptance. You know, are we supposed to just kind of wait for the last griever to, you know, come on over to the other side or what?
So no, I don't think you should. I think at some point there comes a point where you got to move forward. I mean, that's just reality. You have you, there is that point. And if there are people who just are incapable of moving forward, then maybe there are different conversations that need to be had. But
Okay.
before you get to that point, I think, a lot of the skills we talked about earlier, empathy and listening and curiosity, the more we can help people understand and express their emotions around loss and grief, that will help them move through the process. So that's where the skills of listening, of being empathetic, of just connecting as a leader is important in times of change. Now, and then if there are still people who cannot get past it, then yeah, maybe they're just not cut out for the new world post-change.
Okay. So I hear kind of grieving and I hear acceptance, and acceptance is kind of the finish line, right? We know that the grieving has done what it needs to do when we come to that point of acceptance. Is there any practical guidance you can give us in that the middle stage from grief to acceptance? Like What tasks do I need to do? What things do, like, how will I know I'm making progress? Because I know that's going to be a question that somebody listening is going to have when, all right, fine, I'll grieve. But, what am I, how am I going to know I'm actually making progress?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the one thing I will say for grief, is that grief is intensely personal and unique for every, for each person who's going through it. But you need to know where you are. If
Sure.
you don't know where you are, it's hard to navigate yourself out of it or to ask for whatever help you need to get out of it. And I can remember for me after I lost William. And maybe it's because I've been a coach and maybe my training helped me, but I journaled every day on where was I in my grief in that day. And that helped me just not because I was trying to move myself out of it quicker, but it just helped me understand where I was at any given moment.
Well, and it gives you those mile markers and ultimately probably turned into part of your book, right? Where you were able to look at some of those things and remember, oh yeah, I was at that place at that point. Yeah, so my teacher, my son, the book, really, it's not a leadership book. It's more, I mean, what was your intention in writing it? Was it more for your own self-processing, or what were you hoping was going to happen with the book, or is going to
Yeah.
happen with the book?
So, after William died, I for me, I needed to make meaning out of it, right? Because I couldn't let this thing that happened to my son, to our family, just be this sort of random, senseless act. So for me, I said, how can I make meaning out of this horrible tragedy that hit our family? And for me, that meant learning from it. I said, well, what can I learn from this experience to live my life differently, to gain a different perspective on life? And as I would reflect on that and meditate on that, I would start to form new perspectives and lessons started coming to me. And once I sort of codified those, I thought to myself, well, these are, I think, important lessons that anyone can benefit from. And my thinking was, I don't, you shouldn't have to go through a tragic loss like I went through to have access to those lessons. So I said, let me put them into the world. And interestingly enough, I thought it initially when I thought about the book, I thought I'd make it a life lessons and leadership lessons, but I thought that was a bit too much. So I just kept it as, just lessons on life. But look, a lot of the lessons in the book are highly applicable to leaders. Some of the aha moments really are around intentionality, right? If you want to show up differently as a leader, you have to intentionally put in the work to show up differently as a leader. That means defining how you want to show up, defining where you are today, making commitments about how you want to change, and then going out there in the real world and actually trying it out. So
All right, so where can we get the book?
the book is it's available for sale anywhere where books are sold. So Amazon, Goodreads, any big book retailer. If you are more of a small box or a local shop local type person, you can order it from your local bookstore. So it's available pretty much
And
anywhere.
how can we stay in touch with you? How what's our ways to connect with you?
Sure. So my author website, it's meetnickshaw.com.
That's awesome. Nick, thank you so much for taking some time with us today. I think what you said is going to provoke some deeper thought and reflection and hopefully some application of some of these principles for us as leaders so that we can become more calm and more confident in our leadership going forward. So thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, well, that was Nick Shaw. Great interview, great opportunity to learn some more. And you can go out and get his book and be able to grow from that. And I can't wait to be with you next time on the next edition of the Calm and Confident Leader podcast. I'm not sure if I told you, but jasonstonehouse.com. Jasonstonehouse.com is my new website, and it's got everything, my books, my coaching, free stuff, media appearances, all that kind of thing, all at jasonstonehouse.com. So check that out sometime this week and before our next episode. So I'll see you then. Have a great day. And remember, life's a process, so don't do it alone.